This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, July 8, 2021. Producing from a bootleg studio in Long Island, Taylor Schwenk, I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York, and our intern Nathan Garcia is up in California. It's some ungodly hour for him. We will start with the news. New York Mets ace Jacob DeGrom told reporters yesterday he's skipping the All-Star game. This was after he pitched for the Mets in a game yesterday. DeGrom's quote, "I've thought about it, and obviously being named to an All-Star team is a great honor, but I'm just going to take that time and spend it with my family and get healthy for the second half." We're going to talk about that, follow up on some conversation we had about the whole situation yesterday. DeGrom on the mound for the Mets yesterday in game one, and he was outstanding.
Iordano strikes, and that's seven for DeGrom. Swing and a miss, got him with a changeup. And he strikes out Narvaez with the slider. And that is nine strikeouts today for Jake. And make it 10. He gets Peterson looking. So DeGrom finishes the seven innings.
Gary Cohn with that call on SNY, the best pitcher on the planet, dominating. Although his ERA went over one. Newsflash, Jeff McNeil in the eighth inning got a huge hit for the Mets.
Swinging a long drive, base hit into center field. Lindor scores around third. Smith, the throw to the plate by Bradley. Not in time. Smith dives across the plate. He scores the winning run. And Jeff McNeil comes through. A walk-off two-run base hit in the bottom of the eighth inning. It's the first walk-off hit in McNeil's career. And it brings the Mets back to finally beat Milwaukee 4-3.
That from WCBS. The Brewers did come back to win game two of that doubleheader. Juan Soto got a big hit for the Nationals.
That one is hit well to left. See you later. Number 400 for Soto on hits. And just like that, it's 3-0.
And they would go on and win 15-5. That from Bob Carpenter of the Nationals Television Network. By the way, Juan Soto, Joey Gallo will round out the home run derby field. Speaking of the home run derby, yep, that guy, Shohei Ohtani, the biggest story in baseball, was at it again yesterday.
The 2-2. There's one that's lifted high and deep into right field. It is out of here. Shohei Ohtani has homered here in this series. That's number 32 of the season. That's his 15th homer in the last 20 games.
15 homers in the last 20 games. That was Terry Smith, Angels Radio, AM 830. Pretty remarkable, and we're going to be talking about Ohtani coming up. The Houston Astros continue to roll. They beat the Athletics yesterday.
Astros with four players with 50 or more RBIs. And this one's belted deep to right field. Tucker unties it over the bullpen in right field for Kyle. His 14th of the year.
Steve Sparks, Sparksy on KBME. With that call, the Astros now 5.5 games ahead of Oakland. White Sox, Twins, and in the top of the second inning, White Sox took control.
The pitch, a drive deep right. Way back there, and it is gone. A two-run homer for Garcia. Sox have the early lead, 2-0.
Len Casper, ESPN 1000. The White Sox win 6-1. Before the game, they designated outfielder Adam Eaton, veteran, for assignments. That was to clear a roster space for another outfielder, Adam Engel. The Dodgers announced that they are placing Clayton Kershaw on the 10-day injured list with inflammation in his left forearm. The Dodgers also canceled the Trevor Bauer bobblehead night, which had been scheduled for August 19th, and they have pulled all of the merchandise tied to Trevor Bauer from sites at the ballpark and elsewhere. The Rays and the Indians, and this was a milestone, or was it, in game two of the Rays' doubleheader sweep of Cleveland.
Swing and a fly ball to right field. Back at it is Brujan, still going back to the wall. Jepson makes the catch. It is indeed a seven-inning no-hitter for the Rays.
Dave Will, 620 WDAE. Taylor, how big of a deal is this? Seven-inning no-hitter for the Rays, combined no-hitter, a starter, a bunch of relievers.
I'm into it. I think it's a thing. I don't know. It's weird. The seven innings and then the combined no hitters. Do we have any combined no hitters last season? I feel like we didn't, and now we've had two of them.
Yeah, it seems like every day we have a no hitter. 30 for 30 is back with Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players in the world, stepping away from the sport for a remarkable reason, to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Watch Breakaway live Tuesday, July 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, presented by Hyundai. And check out the latest from The Right Time with Bomani Jones. Bo and Spencer Hall discuss college athletes' newfound ability to profit off their name, image, and likeness, including what makes Miami and Ohio State situations unique and how schools may try to get around the rules to further pay their athletes. Follow The Right Time wherever you listen to podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you know, we all have, I think you would agree with me in theory, we all have parts of the job that we don't like to do, right?
I suppose there are, yes, of course.
Okay. Now, there's clearly, you know, you're not going to say it out loud. I think the worst part of your job, any job you've ever had, is working with Tim Kurkjian. and the diva that he is, you weren't allowed to look at him. You had to bow when he passed by. Same thing for me. He insists on exact flavor of water, that sort of thing. You know, working with Tim is a nightmare, right? That was a part of your job at ESPN. It just was miserable.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like how it went working with Tim.
Well, I was thinking about that. Obviously, we're kidding. Tim is great. I was thinking about this with Jacob DeGrom yesterday. He told reporters that he's not going to the All-Star game. You know, he had indicated on Sunday to reporters that, you know, when he was scheduled to pitch on Tuesday and Sunday, that he was not going to go to the All-Star game because he was going to pitch the day or 2 days before the event, and he wanted to rest up. Well, that position was sort of exposed because we had the rain out on Tuesday. He could easily go to the All-Star game and he could pitch in the game, but he told reporters he's not going to do that. He's going to stay home. And I'll say the same thing when Mariano Rivera did it, when Derek Jeter did it, when Manny Ramirez did it. Sarah, I think he needs to go. I think it's part of the job. I think if you're one of the best players in baseball, it's a signature event, which, by the way, benefits the players, benefits the union. I think you have a responsibility to go. What do you think?
I absolutely see that. And for me, the reason that I'm okay with it is because of all those injuries that he's dealt with this year. I mean, I think that's the dividing line. You know, if we're talking about the best pitcher on the planet, which we are, and he hasn't had various starts that ended after five or six innings because of this injury, that injury, then maybe it's a different conversation. But, you know, I also think of the fact that, you know, we think of him as super young, but he is, what, 33 years old. And, you know, he has a family and he has those things to do. And I also just wonder if any of this came down to the fact that he was so counting on pitching on Sunday that kind of, you know, changed the plans. But certainly from the fan standpoint, you know, you're disappointed at not getting to see him on that mound. And when he pitched in the All-Star game in 2015, I mean, that was kind of the first thing that really, really put him on the map. That was after when he was the reigning rookie of the year for the National League. He came in and struck out three up, three down, struck out the side and in the sixth inning. And certainly, you know, And that was the moment where everyone's like, oh, Jacob DeGrom is Jacob DeGrom, capital letters. So it is, of course, disappointing that we won't get that moment again. But as you said, it does sound like this was probably part of the plan for a while.
Yeah, and I'm going to push back on you a little bit. I feel like that there are so many players who could say, look, I'm dinged up. I'm sore. You know, I'd rather go home. I'd rather spend the 3 days elsewhere. But a lot of players don't, because I suspect some of them feel the responsibility. You know, it's a big event for the game. Taylor, I'm curious your perspective as a fan. You know, how do you feel about it? Do you not care, or is it something like, come on, dude?
I mean, I feel like it would be nice for him to give the wave and the acknowledgement, but I don't really care that he's not playing. I mean, it's an all-star game. It's whatever. We see his stuff in, you know, real situations, you know, once a week or whatever. So not a big deal that he's missing it. It would be nice if he was just there for the pomp and circumstance, but it's whatever. I don't really care about who plays in all-star games.
All right. Maybe I'm a get off my lawn type person on this topic, but I think he should go. I think if you're put it this way, I have no problem if someone says, I don't want to go to the all-star game. Well, then say it in spring training. Say at the beginning of spring training, you know what? I'm just going to back out of it, and I'm not interested in going to the All-Star game. And that way, we don't have this discussion about whether or not he should be an All-Star. You want to just back out of it, you know, entirely? That's fine. Someone who is going to the All-Star game is Shohei Ohtani, and I was thinking after seeing it a home run yesterday, Sarah, my conversation I had with Mike Trout before the year started. And I asked him what was possible for Ohtani, because the Angels were starting to get a sense of what this was going to look like with the bubble wrap off him. And Trout said, man, yeah, you know, unbelievable. 30-plus home runs for the year, 10-plus wins. It's going to be incredible. Mike Trout, the great Mike Trout, he underestimated him.
The great forecaster, right? I mean, he loves weather forecasts, and his Ohtani forecast sounds like wasn't even high enough. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, we're at mid-July. We're basically at the All-Star break. The fact that he is still doing this, I mean, every single day I pull up this StatCast page and his hitting side, there's a bunch of sliders. They go from blue, which is bad, to red, which is great. There is a ton of red. Everything with hitting the ball hard. The home run yesterday had 114.5 mile an hour exit velocity. And that splitter, you know, wasn't his best pitch in his last start, but it's still one of the best pitches on record since we've been tracking back to 2008, if we include what he did with that pitch in 2018 and we include this year. And he's really learned to pitch over the course of the season, or shown his ability to pitch. I think we talked about that beforehand, but early in the season, it was a lot of, I'm going to come out and throw 99, 100. And that's not exactly what he's doing now. And I think that that's even more impressive. And Joe Maddon talked about that a little bit post game as well, that it's not just empty the tank, empty the gas tank, but that he is really pitching very specifically. And that's how we know that he is really doing this incredibly well.
So I heard something this week which absolutely blew me away. I thought about talking about it yesterday, but I said, no, I'm going to save that for Sarah, because I think Sarah would get a kick out of this. I was talking with Jeremy Reed, who is a hitting coach for the Angels, about Ohtani. You know, we've got the Derby on Monday. I'm part of the coverage, and you're part of the coverage. And I've started the conversations with the various competitors, asking about their batting practice regimen. You know, what routines do they have? You know, where they like the ball to be pitched, that sort of thing. And as I got started with those questions, Jeremy kind of cut me off. He goes, he hasn't taken batting practice the whole year.
Oh my God.
He hasn't taken any batting practice. And I was like, what? No batting practice for Ohtani the whole year? He goes, no. And I've heard about this with other players, a couple, the most notably Buster Posey when he was in his heyday. You know, he had that great simple swing, and he was a catcher, and so he tried to save, as Hensley Mullins told me back then, he would try to save himself physically. And so before a game, he would go down to the cage, he would do a little flip drill, take like 10 swings, and then he'd be ready to go, but not the full bore batting practice on the field. Ohtani, according to Jeremy Reed, has never taken batting practice this year. He goes, he does a few flip drills, he gets ready, and then he just rakes against the best pitchers in the world. What do you think?
So his regular season at bats are his batting practice. Like, that's right. Insane. And when we see him hitting those home runs and everything that he does, it almost looks like it's batting practice for him. That's crazy. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, actually, when you say that, is just how great Joe Maddon has been as his manager for this year and managing the fact that he's pitching and hitting. I think we've talked about how that's a really good individual to be managing that. And I can remember back to his Cubs days and probably in his Rays days as well. Joe Maddon is not the world's champion of batting practice. I know that he is pretty vocal about having his team and his guys not take it if they don't want to. I can remember that when the Cubs were in a couple slumps, you know, post 2016, everything else. So it's really interesting that this is happening under him. And I feel like there's something related there, but imagine your first batting practice of the year is at Coors Field in the Home Run Derby. I mean, now I'm a little bit stressed for him. Like, he's used to 95 and now it's going to be lobbed in there. I mean, I hope this doesn't affect his Derby preparation, which I know is not the immediate reaction here, but that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm hoping to do more reporting on this later today, tomorrow. And I'm hoping to get more specific information about what his Derby preparations actually going to be. I knew you would have fun with that. It's amazing how quickly polarized the standings are going to be. I was looking at it this week, earlier in the week. I was thinking about the trade market and looking at how the National League West teams have essentially made the wild card inaccessible for the National League Central and National League East teams. The American League, we're starting to see some separation, Sarah, with Houston now 5.5 games ahead of Oakland, and the White Sox taking advantage of this complete collapse by the Cleveland Indians.
Absolutely. You know, we talked, was that last week or earlier this week? I can't even remember, about the National League and about, you know, trade options and the fact that, as you said, I mean, the highest playoff odds as of right now for any team that isn't those top three, any team that isn't currently in playoff position is the Reds at 17.8%. Wow. So that's a huge drop off, right? Everybody else is in the 80s plus or 79 plus. But yeah, in the American League now, I mean, the White Sox have a 96% chance to make the playoffs right now, 96% chance to win the division. I know a lot of the Indians' issues were obviously crystallized with these 7 innings being no hit yesterday. But, you know, the truth is that they've been on this decline. I mean, they were built on pitching and that pitching has been hurt. I don't think there's anyone you can blame. That's just, you know, what happened. They were never going to be a big offensive team. They haven't been a big offensive team in this entire run that they've been on. And when Shane Bieber went down and everybody else in that rotation also, you know, they've dealt with injuries to Savali and Plezak and so on and so forth, that it wasn't going to be sustainable. And the Astros, I mean, they have the best offense in baseball, excuse me. And that's really come to light over the last month or so. And if you look at weighted runs created plus or anything else, I mean, they are far and away ahead of pretty much every team in everything except home runs, but they're hitting enough home runs. They're just not leading the league in it. So I do think that distances them from the A's.
So a big question as we get close to the trade deadline is, what are the biggest needs for contenders? And I'll give you 3 and you can add on, you know, to anything that I mentioned here, or you can chime in with a couple of your own needs among contenders. The Dodgers, I think, clearly need to add a starting pitcher. You know, Clayton Kershaw going on the injured list with an elbow inflammation. And I don't know if that's just, you know, the Dodgers manage their pitchers and innings probably as much or more than any franchise in baseball. And we don't know how serious this is for Kershaw. But the fact is, with Kershaw on the injured list, with Trevor Bauer, you know, out indefinitely, and I'll be talking about his situation coming up with Jesse Rogers, I think they need to go out and get somebody. The Astros could use a late inning reliever. You know, this was pointed out to me by an executive earlier in the week, how they are so good in so many respects, but they could use that depth. And when you look at the Red Sox and the success they've had, it's been surprising. I do think that they're going to need reinforcement as we go along with that pitching staff. We know that Chris Sale could come back. I do think they could use a late inning reliever like Craig Kimbrel. Sarah, what do you think about those or any others that come to mind?
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with all of those. I mean, I think we've been thinking about the Red Sox pitching help needs even as the season started and they were off to the surprising start, just because I think that pitching was perceived as potentially a weakness there, and it hasn't been maybe as much as expected, but that is in the category of something that you expect to sort of return to that mean or whatever else it might be. And, you know, all of these teams are, it feels like every contender every year could always use a reliever. And I don't mean that to write it off, but just to say that that is absolutely always a need. And to that point, I mean, talking about contenders, not currently in playoff position, but a team that I think we would all like to see contend, I would put the Blue Jays and relief pitching help on that list as well. I mean, they're pretty close to the Yankees right now. They're separated by half a game. And if they really want to move into third place or potentially even challenge the Rays and further up in that division, they need bullpen help. And we know, I mean, they, you know, made a move in the offseason for Kirby Yates, and then he ended up missing the entire year due to injury. Jordan Romano has been the closer with, you know, okay, good results, but the bullpen overall has been pretty questionable for them. And that really, when you watch them, that seems to be what separates them from the more solid contenders. Starting pitching could also use some help there, but I think the bullpen is really their biggest issue. So I would put them on the list there as well.
And you know what? Maybe the fact that Kimbrel has a team option in his contract could make him more attractive to the Blue Jays. I can't see the Blue Jays front office saying, yeah, we can justify the rental for Craig Kimbrel for the rest of this year. If he were a free agent at the end of the year, you wouldn't want to pay that price because your odds are less than 50% you're going to make the playoffs. But if you're the Blue Jays is, you know what, we're not only buying him to augment our chances for this year, but we fill the closer role for 2022, that could be attractive to the Blue Jays.
Definitely, because, you know, they're not in, I think the default situation we think of when we think about relief pitcher acquisitions is the 2016 Cubs, and that team was far and away the best in the majors. They made that move for October. The Blue Jays are not in that situation. They are not one closer away from winning Game 7 of the World Series as opposed to losing it. They're still trying to compete in that division, so it's not as much of a lock. So to that point, you don't want to make that trade and then still miss the playoffs if you're only going to have him for that 1 year. But I do think having the potential for that second year puts them in a different spot. And, you know, they've been really competitive, and I fully expect them to be even more competitive next year. So if you're already thinking of 2022 and entering with a lockdown crate, Kimbrel, then you're in a pretty great spot.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for doing this. I will see you at the Derby.
Awesome. Thank you. Can't wait.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. And Jesse, you know, a lot of the time you've covered baseball, you've covered the Chicago Cubs. And I think everyone wants to know, is the white flag, the for sale sign, up and over Wrigley Field at this point, given where they stand in the standings?
The answer is yes. After 11 straight losses in a row, you can't be surprised to hear that, Buster, right? I think they kind of played over their skis a little bit in May. They went 19-8, 11 over, ironically, and then they gave it all back these last 11 days, finally winning a game last night. But the for sale sign was always going to be there. I think they just delayed it a little bit with the way they were playing. And if they repeated their May and June, maybe this would have been a special season, but the odds of that were very slim. They just don't have the starting rotation to go the distance. So, yes, I think it's been sort of an easy decision now for Jed Hoyer. He was going to be faced with a very tough one if they continue to be around first place or a few games out. Now he has an easier decision, and it is going to be to sell. As soon as this draft is over, they're going to go deep into, you know, who wants Craig Kimbrell? Who wants Chris Bryant? Who wants a few of these other pieces? Andrew Chafin, great left-handed pitcher, having a great year. He'll be wanted out in the open market. Hopefully they can bring back some prospects.
And I think there's going to be volume of bidders for Kimbrell. Maybe in my mind, he's going to be the most coveted asset, you know, player on the trade market this summer, because every team, every contender can add, you always use another reliever. You know, it's a little bit more complicated. And I wanted to get your perspective on this, because, you know, Kimbrell, with a lot of these relievers, you know, the question of whether or not they're a closer is not really a factor, you know, because teams move around relievers all the time. It does seem like that a team acquiring Kimbrell will have to keep that in mind. So if you're the Boston Red Sox and you have Matt Barnes, has been so great this season as closer, if you're Alex Cora, you probably would, and they were to acquire Kimbrell, you'd have to navigate around that question, because it seems like Kimbrell kind of made it clear he wants to be a closer.
And he probably deserves to be. I mean, he's been the best reliever in the game, basically bar none, and for my money, from the stuff that I've seen him. And I wasn't always a big believer in him since coming over to the Cubs. So, yes, you'd have to move your ninth inning guy down. Look, I saw this up close with the Cubs in 16, Buster. They looked at Aroldis Chapman as their ticket to the World Series, and they were willing to give up a top prospect at the time in Gleyber Torres, and it worked. And I think that's what other teams will look at Kimbrell and say, he doesn't just make us better. He gets us to the World Series. He may win us the World Series because of what it does to the rest of that bullpen, the trickle-down effect. You already have a good bullpen if you're a contending team. You add him, now you're a World Series contender in itself. So I do think someone's going to give up a haul for him. Maybe it's just a top prospect or two, whatever the number. It's quantity or quality or both. I think it's going to happen. And I think the conversation's going to have to be with their own closer. The Cubs had to move Hector Rondon down from the ninth inning to the eighth inning in 16. That was easy because Rondon wasn't established. Might be a tougher conversation with Barnes or some other guys, Lou Trevino. But I think that's the tough discussion the manager has to have with his own guy, because Kimbrell could be your ticket to the World Series.
Yeah, and I think from the Red Sox perspective, when you look at sort of how that league is shaping up and how their season is, I could absolutely see them making a move for him. You know, the fact that Alex Cora knows him from the past, has worked with him from the past. They've seen him had success in Boston, and so that would work for him. But we talked a little bit about this in the podcast yesterday, tweeted about this. I was talking with a high-ranking baseball executive the other day, and I mentioned, boy, the Red Sox would be a natural fit, and this executive pushed back on me. He goes, no. Astros, Oakland. When he talked about, you know, the Astros being a team where they have their bullpen is thin. You've got Presley doing a great job at the back end, but he's been a great middle inning guy. He would be a natural fit, Kimbrell, for the Astros. And, you know, their owner would absolutely love to get the Astros back into the postseason, have some postseason success, given the strength of their offense.
Let me go to the other team you mentioned, because I want to see if you buy into what I'm selling here. Doesn't Craig Kimbrell just seem like he should be on the Oakland Athletics? His demeanor, his look, he just, you know, that's a team. I was talking to Marcus Semien recently, and he was talking about his Blue Jays team and how they're built differently than the A's. The A's were built from the bullpen out, so to speak. And I just feel like Craig Kimbrell would fit the A's persona. The Cubs have done business with Billy Beane. Of course, everybody's done business with the Oakland Athletics over the years. So I could see that as much as any team. But they just, I believe Trevino was the reliever of the month. So, I mean, there's like you said, tough conversations have to be had depending on the roles that you're gonna give these guys.
Now, I think it becomes much more complicated for the Cubs other than trading pitching. In other words, you know, Anthony Rizzo is a respected veteran. He's a great defensive player. He's going to get on base. You know, he's always going to be 360, 370 on base percentage. Chris Bryant hasn't hit as well lately, but he's someone who, you know, always going to have good plate appearances. You can move him around a little bit. But general managers through the years have always told me that it's harder to trade elite position players during the season because it's a very specialized market. when you look at potential matchups for the Cubs in the trade market for the position players, what do you see?
Well, there's a great irony to this. I see two teams, and they're very close to the Chicago Cubs. One's on the other side of town, the White Sox. They always love Jock Peterson, and I still think they may have a hole right there in the left-handed side of the batter's box. He'd be a good fit, depending on Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, of course. And I'll tell you, the other team that Anthony Rizzo would be a good fit with, that's the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a scout text me, would Jed trade with the Milwaukee Brewers? Vogelbach down, even if he was healthy. I think Rizzo's an upgrade. And I said, yes, they did it with the White Sox recently, but it'd be the same, you know, with Eloy and Quintana. It'd be the same theory. There'd be a tax involved to the Brewers. You have to pay us a little bit more in order for us to hand you possibly the World Series, you know, through Anthony Rizzo and the heat we're going to take from our fan base. And of course, him beating us up the final 2 months if we trade him to all those factors mean you have to pay us a little bit more for Rizzo. I'm not sure the Brewers would do that because they're pretty conservative with how they react to things. But man, Rizzo, the leadership, the bat, the opening at first base, he'd be a good fit in Milwaukee.
How about the defense? I mean, how about the Brewers defense and pitching that they would have if they were to get Rizzo at first base? That would be fascinating. My instinct is I don't think Jed would care about giving the White Sox Jock Peterson because Jock Peterson is not a legacy player. He's a rental. I don't think that would be that big of a deal. I agree with you about Rizzo. I think it would be a little bit harder to trade him to the Brewers, especially if they're in that, you know, 9-game range behind. But I think the reality is for Jed, there are not a lot of teams banging down his door for Anthony Rizzo.
No, he's probably worth more to the Cubs than he is on the open market, so to speak. I don't disagree with that. I think that there has to be a need. Milwaukee has a need there. They're one of the worst hitting teams in the league. They don't have a first baseman. There's a need there. You'd have to have an injury. Most contending teams have a first baseman, and most of them have a good first baseman. So the need would have to open up an injury, whatever the case may be. So you're right about that. The market is slimmer for position players in general, and that's why their haul is going to come through their pitchers.
I just have a feeling Chris Bryant's going to wind up on the Mets. I just feel like, again, because of the way that it's shaping up, where you have the three National League West teams, it basically made the wild card inaccessible for the Central and the East teams. You only have five teams with better than a 20% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs in the National League. And the American League is beginning to become very polarized, where you have the Astros 5.5 games ahead of Oakland this morning. You have the White Sox, 8 or 9 games ahead of the Indians who have collapsed here. Finally, all those injuries manifesting themselves for him or for them. So I don't think there are going to be a lot of super motivated buyers the way that it's playing out. And at some point, I wonder if Jed's going to be sitting there in the last 10 days of July saying, man, I got to get something for Brian. And the team with a clear interest, potentially the whole third base, would be the Mets.
Yeah, I looked at some teams. I wondered about him in the outfield. Like, would Tampa Bay somehow pull the trigger?
Yeah.
Oakland. Philadelphia was just in town here in Chicago. And I'll tell you, Alec Bohm, man, that's a sort of volatile player in my world. Would they swap out third baseman for two months to Chris Bryant?
I want to stop you there on the Phillies real quick. I agree with you in theory. I would have a hard time if I'm Dombrowski, Dave Dombrowski, the general manager of the Phillies, justifying the investment that would be required when your chances to make the playoffs are 11%. Like the Phillies would have to close it to a game or two before I could go to my owner and say, yeah, we should make that investment. What do you think?
I do agree with you on that. And it's the same answer I give you about Kimbrel to the Phillies even. I mean, that team could absolutely use Craig Kimbrel, but you don't trade for Craig Kimbrel if you're in third place. You trade for Craig Kimbrel if you really think you're a World Series contender, and Dombrowski is going to have to make that calculation.
Yep. All right. What are the White Sox going to do? Team across town.
You know, everyone talks about a bat because of their injuries, and that may or may not happen. I mean, it will happen. But what's interesting to me is getting the ball to Liam Hendricks hasn't been as easy as they thought it would be. Matt Foster hasn't had the season they thought. Cody Hoyer, great arm. He's had some good moments in high leverage and, you know, not so good. Look at some of these ERAs in the bullpen leading up to Liam Hendricks, especially from the right side, Buster. So I think they're going to be, surprisingly, I think, to a lot of people, in the market for reliever. I mean, most contending teams are anyway, right? You're always trying to fortify. I think Garrett Crochet and Aaron Bummer from the left side is fine. Bummer's had sort of an unlucky season. So reliever, left-handed bat, backup catcher until Grandal comes back. You know, I thought they might make a minor league trade for Jonathan Lucroy, but he just got called up to the Braves. But I don't, it was great news about Grandal because you don't have to go out and trade for a starter. You can trade for a backup and then bide your time with Zach Collins until Grandal comes back. We had a caller on the radio yesterday on ESPN 1000 ask about Yadier Molina waving his no trade clause and the White Sox trading for him with Tony La Russa at the helm. And I didn't think so either. Because first of all, what happens when Grandal comes back? One of them sitting.
Right. And that'll never happen. Plus Molina is a legacy guy. You know, it's funny because Adam Wainwright has also spent his whole career with the Cardinals. And you know, we'll just take a moment to address this. I'm curious because you know, I've seen the Cardinals many times, talk to Wainwright, talk to Molina. You know, they're both have spent their whole careers with the Cardinals. I cannot see the Cardinals ever asking Molina to accept a deal to another team. He's going to play his whole career with the Cardinals. But I can, in a weird way, see them going to Adam Wainwright before the trade deadline this year saying, you know what, we're out of it. You're on a one-year contract. Adam, what would you like? And Adam might see he's got, what, five kids? And he might say, no, I want to finish the year with the Cardinals. And they would be like, okay, that's fine. But I think they'd be more likely to just entertain what his thoughts are on that. And if he wants to go to a contender toward the end of his career, I think they would do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I know Wainwright better than I know Molina. And in talking to Wainwright, even in the offseason, he certainly was waiting the Cardinals out. I think he knew he was going to be back there. And I'm not sure what would have happened if they had said, no, we can't work it out. So it's an interesting point. But look, the chance at October baseball compared to playing out the string has to be attractive to players like Wainwright or Rizzo or these guys. I mean, some of these guys haven't played meaningless September and August baseball in a long time, and they don't really like it. And to sit home in October, they don't, especially at Wainwright's age. So it's an interesting point. I agree with you. I'd see Wainwright more than Molina possibly doing that.
Yeah, and Rizzo, you know, while he is always going to be the guy who caught the out that got him the championship, he's already been traded twice in his lifetime. So that wouldn't necessarily be anything new. 60 seconds left. Just give me a – see if you agree with me on this. Trevor Bauer, merchandise pulled at Dodger Stadium, the bobblehead night suspended moving forward. I think this is the Dodgers preparing for the possibility they go the rest of the year without Trevor Bauer. What do you think?
Yeah, the feeling around baseball is this is going to turn into the worst case scenario for Bauer and just the story in itself, like just the way people are talking and feeling that this guy is in trouble. And I can see why the Dodgers are starting to distance themselves. We haven't heard a lot from the union on this, right? It's a very sensitive situation, but where there's smoke, there's fire, Buster. Is that kind of the feeling you get? Like there's just so many people around his orbit that are very worried about what's going to happen to him and obviously the victim as well, what she's gone through. And it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for him.
The silence from the other Dodger players is deafening in terms of defending Trevor Bauer or saying nice things about Trevor Bauer in this moment. So we'll see where that goes. All right. Thanks, Jesse. Great to talk with you.
See you at the All-Star game.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we have our friend Amy Chapman at Amy R. Chapman. She writes in, now that we are about halfway through the season, are there two preseason predictions, one AL, one NL, that you'd like a do-over?
Oh, Amy, you remind me of my Angels pick in the American League West. Okay? We get the Astros running away with it. We get Oakland a lot better. And I pick the Angels. Not good. I don't really regret the Yankees pick in the American League East. I thought that was perfectly reasonable.
Right.
And I don't regret a National League pick at this point. Right. I had the Padres. I had the Dodgers. I had the Brewers in the Central. I had the Mets and the Braves. I think the Braves is a reasonable pick. But the Angels pick, that was a doofus pick.
It's all good. I'm sure Amy will forgive you. Let's go to Elizabeth Hart at eHartTweets. She writes in, if a no-hitter happens in seven innings, but it takes five pitchers to throw it, does it even make a sound or count?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't count. They're saying the seven innings, if you no-hit for seven innings, that's not a no-hitter, which I don't get. I think they should change that, but it does add. What would that be now, nine? If seven inning, no, yeah. 10, right? Because Bumgarner had a seven inning no-hitter early in the year. You get the two combined seven inning no-hitters, right? Or, you know, something. But anyway, we'd be close to double digits at that point for no-hitters this year.
Let's go to Ja Tai Joe at Ja Tai Joe 87. Ja Tai Joe writes in, is it just me or has the sticky stuff crackdown helped with pace of play? It feels like more balls are put in play earlier in the at-bat. It's possible that I'm just seeing things that are not there. What do you think?
I agree with you. And it's just a guess from watching the games, but I'm seeing the ball put in play a lot more. I'm seeing a lot more cement mixer breaking balls. You know, the ones that get hammered as opposed to those nasty wiffle ball breaking balls.
Chilango Asecas writes in at Chilango Asecas says, I heard Buster say Cashman would stay because he would get another job quickly, but sometimes a divorce makes sense. When Epstein and the Red Sox parted, both sides won World Series shortly after. Perhaps it's best thoughts. Greetings from Mexico City. And sometimes this is kind of the thing, like, you know, you're just in a place and you need to shake things up. That's like a very human thing in a job, and it would make sense for Cashman too.
Oh, 100%. Look, Theo Epstein has said he thinks 10 years in one place is enough. And Brian Cashman's been with the organization for more than 30 years. And you know what? If at the end of this year, at the end of next year, let's say the Yankees don't make the playoffs this year and they kind of slogged along in 2022 and he decided he wanted to make a change, I think that'd be perfectly reasonable. And you know what? Brian Cashman might be the point in his career where he's like, you know what? I'd like to go build something and face a different challenge in a smaller market. Because doing this in New York, you know, you're working under the Steinbrenner doctrine, which is if you don't win the World Series, you suck. It's different. I think I told you. Yeah, I talked to Tim about it the other day, getting that email from a baseball official with a mid-market team, small market team, basically saying, hey, why is everyone – the Yankees are over 500. They have a winning record, and we're talking about them like they're a total disaster.
Last one for the day. Corey Rueckert at CoreyR_12 writes in, the Reds have seven games in a row versus the Brewers coming up. Do these games decide if the Reds buy or sell at the deadline?
That is not the belief of rival executives, Corey. You know, we'll see. I mean, if you go 1-6, I think that makes it pretty clear. But it's been interesting. The read from other teams on the Reds is that they will be one of the last teams to actually wave the white flag. That Bob Castellini, their owner, is extremely competitive. And there's a perception among other teams that they should absolutely, if they don't intend to contend this year, they should put Nicholas Castellanos out in the trade market because you're going to get huge value. You can shape your payroll. You're selling a stock when it's at its highest. But the perception of other teams is they'll never do that. You know, that's not really the proactive way that Castellini thinks.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, Jesse, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.